for complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care. All right, good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Miss Sarah, how, and I know we talk about the weather a lot, but I think it's kind of important because here in Missouri, we have all four seasons.
Yes, we do.
Sometimes in the same week.
Yes, we do.
So how are you ready for spring? Because we're coming up on the spring season.
Yes, all my flowers are starting to bloom.
Oh,
yes, and then it gets cold and then I get nervous.
I've done the same thing. Now, I haven't put any of our gardening out yet. I think we're kind of at the onset of gardening season, but we're coming up pretty quick.
That's right.
I am really good out of the gate usually. Like, I do the tilling and I get the ground ready and I go get the plants and yada, yada, yada. And then as the season rolls on, I fall behind.
Oh, Dustin.
And the weeds get to me. We usually have a decent yield. I've done the above raised beds, if you will. I've done I have a pretty good garden spot there at the house. But it's just about the time for all of that shenanigans to get outside, and I'm ready for it.
Yep, I am too. I thought about you last week whenever we were having all four seasons
Yes.
And we had quite a few severe thunderstorms kind of pop up. And one thing that popped up was flooding.
Yes.
And I thought, I really hope that people make sure to turn around.
Yep.
I hope that they're safe. I hope they keep their vehicles safe. But that was the one thing that I thought of was there's probably going to be an uptick in flood vehicles just here in the next few weeks or months. So if you're going to be in the market to purchase a new-to-you vehicle, I would definitely make sure to schedule a pre-purchase inspection before you actually make that commitment, because it just seems like this is the time of year that those kind of vehicles pop up.
It really is. And so I actually live by a low-water crossing that, unfortunately, over the years, I've seen quite a few people try and go through it, and then it washes their vehicle off down into the low water crossing. And there's really no coming back from that. No matter how good of a mechanic or technician I am, the cost, whether it's worth actually reviving a flood vehicle, it's just not. That water gets into all the electronics, all the modules, God forbid. You know, like guys that take their boat to the lake a lot, when I check the differential fluid, I see kind of this like chocolate milky color from them submerging the rear differential into the lake. And if their vent is not correct, if they've got a leaky axle seal, leaky pinion seal, whatever the case may be, a lot of guys don't catch that in time. And that just is, that's maybe not the extreme flood vehicle you're talking about. But I find those during pre-purchase inspections quite often. And one of the things I saw online the other day, I think we all kind of study and live online. One of the cool ideas that I saw, and I've never done this, but I'm going to add this to my checkout process, and I think you can as well, is they urged the people as they're looking at the vehicle to pull the seatbelt all the way out. And when they said that, I was like, what are they doing? But it actually, inside the door, a lot of detail shops that are trying to clean up those vehicles and mask the fact that they potentially were flooded, they don't clean that seatbelt because it's down inside the panel or inside the seat or whatever. And it ends up to have a watermark or a sand silt mark. And that's something that I've looked at and found like in trunks a lot of times because people won't clean them as well. And that will give you, just even as the consumer, like out on the lot, you know, one of the biggest red flags. Now, I did have, the COVID thing here a few years ago, so my smell isn't what it used to be. It's kind of coming back a little bit, so I'm a little optimistic about that. But before that, one of the biggest giveaways on a flood vehicle is I could usually smell it right out of the gate. It kind of had that, you know, like stagnant water, like, you know, pond smell, if you will. And so that kind of gives it away. But the seatbelt and the watermark or the silt sand mark, depending on, you know, how and where it was flooded, I just thought was a really good thing. So I'm going to add that to kind of my checkout process for folks, and just kind of be that extra thorough part of it. Now, you know, it's enticing to buy a flood vehicle sometimes because, man, they're cheap as dirt. But in my opinion, if it's flooded very much at all, it really needs to go to the salvage yard and sell whatever parts that you can sell off of it and then just be crushed. Because, Sarah, have you ever had like a cell phone that you dropped in the water ever? You know, sometimes it works right afterwards.
Got to put it in rice.
You got to put it in rice.
Is that what you
got
to do with the vehicles?
You know, maybe. We'll have to, that could be a different process for us. But they typically degrade and continue to corrode inside. And so you lose the speaker, you lose the microphone, then the buttons or the screen get wonky or whatever. And that's pretty much what your car is going to do. So, you know, if I was ever in a spot where I had like a flood car, you know, like maybe it happened to me for whatever reason, I would just let the insurance take it away. Like there's a lot of times where you can buy the vehicles back and repair them and put them back on the roads. But to emphasize how bad a flood car is, it will never get any better, no matter how good of a mechanic that you have, whether you put a whole new wiring harness and new modules in it, and God forbid you got water inside the engine, transmission, transfer case, whatever. It's pretty much a done deal at that point in time. So, Sarah, you bring up a real good point with the frequent rains. That's a thing. And then, secondly, the thing I always forget about is wiper blades, as goofy as that sounds. Like, I never remember when it's nice outside until it's pouring rain and I'm driving at night and I can't see a doggone thing. And then I'm like, oh, I got to get some wiper blades on the vehicles. And so I try and take care of that for all of our fleet with the kids and Stacy and I's cars. I always Rain-X. I'm a big Rain-X fan. I think that's a tip for the rainy spring. Can you buff it on with the little spray can, you know, kind of like Windex? It works great. I personally get the concentrate additive that's either in the washer fluid or I add it to the washer fluids for all of our vehicles to make sure we're in decent shape. But as we go into the rainy season, that's something that's forgotten quite often.
Right.
Have you ever been there at like at night and your wipers suck?
Yes. And you know what? It always seems to be the driver wiper that's always messed up. So, I mean, the passenger side is perfectly fine. And the next thing you know, it's streaking across the driver's side and it's like right in your line of vision.
So something that I learned. So my dad was an auto body technician the majority of my life. And then the paint was Emron back in the day. And that kind of started to affect his health. So he got out of that and went into doing windshield and glass repair, which was kind of cool. He took me to work all the time, and you know, I learned a lot about those trades. When you run crappy wipers, that mark you're talking about will actually get a memory in the windshield.
Oh.
And it will ruin the windshield. They actually call it a wiper mark, or that's what it, at least he referred to it as a glazer, is what a glass technician is called. I thought that was kind of a neat professional term for him. But what'll happen, and a lot of times when people get new windows, so you get a brand new windshield, and I love a brand new windshield. It really shows you how bad the previous one was. That is the time to put brand new wipers on it and not put the old wipers onto the new windshield, because it will mark the new windshield.
That makes sense.
And, you know, everybody thinks glass is pretty tough, and it is, but it does get a memory or worn, if you will. So if you run crappy wipers, or again, if you've been running crappy wipers on a new window, it just kind of protects that investment just a little bit. And anything you can do to see, I'm a big kind of stickler about being able to see. Typically, every time I fuel up, I will seek out a gas station that has good squeegees and good chemical, not just the old stagnant pond water that I was talking about earlier, because some of the gas stations is gross.
Oh, yeah.
But like the truck stops, I really like, because typically I'm driving a higher profile truck. Any of you out there driving, you know, Super Duties or Power Strokes, you know, whatever the case may be, Duramax, Cummins. The ones with the real long, like the 4 to 6 foot handle on them, I will literally choose that gas station to make sure that I can clean all the windows while I'm fueling the truck, just so I can make sure and have good visibility. There's a lot of time I'm towing or watching out for other drivers. Speaking of the other drivers, I know we're coming up on a break. Sarah, I had a, would it be a road rage incident the last couple of weeks that I thought I would share with you? I wasn't directly involved, but I kind of had to step in, I guess, and mitigate this a little bit.
I can't wait to hear about this.
I know it. I know it. But I think we need to step into a break. I'll share all that with you as soon as we come back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. right, you got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. I'm going to share, you know, I don't mean to be story time, but this was a little bit weird, and I'm going to tell you exactly how I handled it. And,
now, you know, what city were you in?
So I was in front of the Republic High School going through the roundabouts. So this is a local story.
Uh-oh.
So I know everybody has the affinity that the city planners apparently have decided we no longer have four-way stops, we have roundabouts.
I hate a roundabout.
Well, I think the folks in this story probably
they probably
share.
Ate them too.
So I am coming home, and it's like Thursday or Friday. It's been a long week, you know, just like everybody else, worked my butt off and was ready to go home. And I'm on the phone with a friend of mine. You know, I got my little earpiece in. Mm-hmm. And I see this car, like, brake checking, and that would be three cars up from me. And I see the car behind them trying to, I think essentially my read on it was the lead car, you know, really didn't manage the roundabout very, like, smoothly. And the car behind him thought, hey, there's nothing coming. You need to go. I mean, that's the point of the roundabout, right? And so I see them brake checking and riding the bumper, and they're making it through the roundabout. And I'm just having a conversation. I'm in a really chill mood. I'm done with work. I'm going to go home and, you know, do the home thing. And so we pull up to the stoplight there at Republic Road. My GPS calls it Rudolph Road, but that's, I've never heard it called that. But Republic Road and ZZ there.
ZZ.
Yes, it's what it does too. And you can only make a left or go straight. And so I get in the left lane. All three cars in front of me get in the left lane, and I'm sitting there and just casually listening to the radio, chatting. And I see a gentleman get out and walk back to the car that was right behind him. So two cars in front of me. And I'm not one to, like, dabble in other people's, you know, business. And, you know, this is traffic, though, and you need to get out of the way. Well, so the gentleman's talking, and then I see it's to a lady. Now, she's mad, too, so she jumps out, and I'm like, look, this is bad. Like, with road rage stuff like this, nothing is probably going to come good of it. But I'm like, okay, maybe they'll say their piece and get out of the way. And this is over, like, seconds. This isn't, like, minutes that I'm kind of making, you know, some of these judgment calls. And I'm watching, and he's not, it's not like I'm afraid that he's going to, like, hit her or anything like that. But it's definitely escalating. And then I see the light change. And I lost my opportunity to get through the turn arrow. And now I got to wait another cycle. Well, apparently that's the breaking point for me. Because I'm like, oh, I've had enough of this. Well, in the midst of that, the lady in front of me, which would be the car directly, you know, in between me and these folks, she gets out and it's going nowhere fast. And I'm like, you know what? I've had enough of this. So I get out and I say, hey, why don't you get the out of the way? You're holding up traffic. And I said it pretty aggressively, and I'm obviously a larger sized gentleman. The guy doesn't make any eye contact. I see him hear me and he stops speaking. And he just turns around and he walks right to his car. He gets in. The lady that he was having the discussion with gets in. The lady that was directly in front of me says, well, I guess it took a man to handle that conversation. I was like, look, I just want to go home, folks.
I've been working eight hours.
I know. Wow. And I'm like, what in the world is going on
here?
Well,
I will say that you, if people don't know who you are, you are like 6'4".
Yeah.
You're a tall dude.
Yeah.
And so I'd be intimidated too.
It wasn't that. And I wasn't trying to be a turd to these
people. No, you just get frustrated with people.
And I'm
I swear.
Come on. So I guess my question is, A, for whatever it's worth, I don't think you should get out of your car, male or female, during a road rage incident.
And you don't do it when you are in like an active traffic area.
Because
you never know. Somebody could swerve right into you, take your door off, hurt you, hit you.
Or the other aggressor, because clearly tensions were high, could assault you of some kind.
So Matt Canovey, God rest his soul, he told me one time that you never know what the other person has in their vehicle.
Right.
And that is, he made that comment because we were talking about road rage.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it does not matter if you are in the right or the wrong. You do not engage with people. You go the opposite way if you feel threatened, because you, once again, you never know what somebody has in their vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had that in the back of my mind because I might get a little road rage.
But I think we all... dabble in that.
I do always think that. So maybe keep that in the back of your mind too.
Absolutely. So I was a student of the late, great Canovi and Associates. And that was something that in every class I ever took, he had, whether it was a CCW class, entry level to pistol, whatever, that was something that he worked into any class I took from him. And I think he was, obviously, that was his, he was the expert in that area. And I always took that to heart. And it really wasn't that I wanted to pick a, you know, a fight or a bone with any of the people involved. It's just that that's not the time or place that anything constructive is going to happen. And for their sakes, I hope they just went home and they just kind of reflected on things.
Right.
But my point is, and I get it, you know, it's, and Matt's 100% right. Maybe I think I'm 6'4" and bulletproof. I'm not, obviously. I feel comfortable, obviously, getting out and addressing and dealing with some of those situations, but most people probably are not.
Mm-hmm.
And you extremely expose yourself to harm and risk getting out of the situation or getting out of your vehicle. You know, in my personal opinion, the doors should have stayed locked. The window should have stayed up. You know, I don't know that even engaging through the window is the right call because you see all the videos online. I'm sure I'm not the only one that sees people bashing windows out, and, you know, doing dumb things. You know, you should not escalate that at all. And I'm glad at least me getting out and voicing something or, you know, kind of a, hopefully a situation that either you're going to commit to this situation or you're going to get back in your car.
Right. Well, what was the whole point of, you know, getting out
exactly.
anyways? What was your point?
Yeah. You want to just scold the other person? How about you go about your day and you go on and hopefully maybe you navigate the roundabout, both parties, better. And, you know, with the roundabouts, the diverging diamonds that are here in Springfield, mm-hmm. the amount of people that are on their doggone cell phones while they're driving and trying to navigate through some of these intersections.
Right.
I mean, you know, in the big scheme of things, we had better be driving while we're in the car, not, you know, trying to learn the roundabout. By now, they're everywhere. I would hope that folks would get on board that, hey, this is how it goes. And I'll be honest, I pull trailers a lot. And I know I talk about trailers every dang show, but I can't help it. I'm not changing. I like that. Getting the trailer through the roundabout is probably my biggest pet peeve, that you really got to own every inch of that roundabout. And they somewhat accommodate, but just keeping the flow of traffic going. And that was probably the thing that ground my gears the most, is that these people were mucking it up for, I don't know, 30 cars that had piled up behind me. And I could see that it was wrapped from that stoplight, if you're familiar with that intersection, all the way back. And now it was gumming up the roundabout in less than 30 seconds of these yahoos letting the light change and not going through the intersection.
Right.
So you had better be a, I work on this with my children, a situational aware person, whether you're in a parking lot, driving your car, parking your car, going to the house, going to the store, you had better be watching for who and what is around you and not be a complacent, easy target. Heads up, eyes are moving around, checking your surroundings, checking your mirrors in this instance, keeping your doors locked and your window up and not getting out and engaging with somebody that's obviously hostile and not thinking clearly, to your point, to get out in the middle of a busy intersection to have words with somebody.
Right.
It just drives me crazy that that's the state of the world, as well as, you know, I've got younger children and, you know, at some point they're going to be out on their own. And this is lessons and why I kind of share this story with you guys out there in Radioland, that, you know, we need to be talking and preparing young folks to be able to deal with this, as well as our loved ones is, on top of that. You know, I am not concerned, obviously, to get out and deal with the situation. I pick up hitchhikers from time to time. I know that's a big faux pas, but I do it with me only in the vehicle. I would never do it with the kids or Stacy in there, because I can't mitigate the risk, in my opinion. The juice isn't worth the squeeze in that manner, and this really wasn't either. So if you've got loved ones out there, I hope you share either this podcast or the show later with them, that maybe it will give them something to think about before they're in that situation. And the reason that I have taken classes for, you know, self-defense, obviously firearms training, is because I didn't want to be learning or figuring it out in the midst of a high stress situation in this manner. So you guys can give me your feedback of what you all think should have been done or what you would have done in that instance. But that was my play on it. Whether it was right, wrong, and different, it ended up working out that both parties got in their vehicle. Nothing bad happened. They drove on about their day, and hopefully they went separate ways. I did notice that they ended up turning both on the same road, and I hope that they didn't follow each other and do anything dumb.
Yeah.
You know, because that's always a possibility. I've never been followed, I guess, by anybody that had ill intentions.
I have.
And the fact that you know that, Sarah, is mm-hmm. awesome. And then have a plan of what to do, whether you call ahead to a loved one and have them prepared, or you drive to the police or fire department mm-hmm. To mitigate the risk of that situation, I think is extremely important.
Yeah, I believe that the police department, if you are being followed mm-hmm. or tailed by somebody that because of a road rage incident, they always suggest you just drive straight to yep. the police station.
I could not agree more.
Because people are crazy.
Yeah, and to your point and the late Matt Canovey's point, you have no idea who that person is or what they have in their car, what exactly. they're capable of. You know, they may be whacked out of their mind on who knows what. And, you know, I've seen it to where even law enforcement, you know, will tase somebody that's on a significant stimulant upper and it really not faze them all that. And that's a, you know, me being a pretty good sized lad, that doesn't mean that I'm just, you know, invincible by no means. I may get a hold of somebody that doesn't recognize pain, doesn't recognize, hey, my arm's broken, and they continue until you have to, you know, act with finality. So I know that was a little bit of a story. Give me your feedback if you all don't mind. You can text in. But Sarah and I are down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF. We'll be right back after the break.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back. You got Sarah and Dustin still. We got a couple more segments here. You know, I definitely want your guys' feedback on that last segment, if you don't mind. I'd like to know maybe if you've got some stories or some lessons that we can learn from. You know, if you'll share it with us through the talk and text line, that would be awesome. And we'll kind of air some of that out. Sarah, how do they go about doing that?
Sure. So you can text us on the Pyramid Roofing Company talk and text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743. Or if you can't remember that, I got an easier way for you. You can download the KSGF app. We have a text the studio button, so you don't even have to remember that phone number. Yeah, you just hit that button. It automatically pulls up a little text thing for you. Mm-hmm. You can send your text in and be on your merry way.
Now, that's making it easier and easier to mm-hmm. be a part of the
that's
show.
That's what we do. We like simple.
That is fantastic.
But, hey, I got a couple stories for
you.
Oh,
okay. Let's do that. Yeah. What do you got?
So what's your thought on this?
Okay.
So Jaguar, mm-hmm. we don't talk about them too terribly often here.
Why
on
do
the
you
show.
Think that is?
I don't know. I think we're racist against Jaguar.
No, it's not doing anything about racism. Mainly because the engineering, last I knew, and I might be a little mistaken on that, Ford Motor Company owns Jaguar. Mm-hmm. So their electrical systems and some of their just engineered problems, I'm not a big fan of. So I typically, you have to be a special person for me to work on your Jaguar. Not that I haven't over the years. I have fixed several of them. But you've got to be somebody for me to take on that Jaguar.
So. I have a feeling that you're going to be working on them less and less now because okay. Car and Driver is reporting Jaguar is ending production of gas cars entirely.
Wow.
Before new EVs arrive.
I'm not thinking that's probably the best business decision, at least in my humble opinion
no,
right now.
No, I don't think so either. So I'll read through this okay. really quick for you. So Jaguar is planning a phoenix-like rebirth as the British automaker execute its plan on becoming an EV-only manufacturer by 2025. Mm. This will involve killing off its current lineup while also shifting towards higher-cost vehicles. This means that the gas-powered XF sedan and E-Pace and the F-Pace crossovers will cease production later this year. And Joe Eberhardt, the Jaguar Land Rover's North America president and CEO, recently explained the shift to road and track. So that is like a production, mm-hmm. Like a magazine production.
Okay.
So they said that the majority of our products cease product in June, but they will be on sale for a much longer time. We will have a production schedule that enables us to have a continuous supply of vehicles until the new cars come. Hmm. We're trying to time it so we have enough volume to take us through the launch of the new products and have a clean handover. Now, for Jaguar to achieve that clean handover, some existing models will need to remain on sale for over a year after production ends until the EVs arrive. Now, the automaker has confirmed that 3 new models are planned for the upcoming Jaguar electric architecture platform, with the first model confirmed to be a 4-door GT. The automaker promises we'll see that car before the end of the year, with deliveries starting in 2025. Now, according to Automotive News, JLR CEO Adrian Mardell confirmed during the automaker's earnings call last month that the second new EV model will arrive late 2025, and then the third will be in 2026. Now, the unnamed GT appears to be targeting other high-dollar and high-performing electric sedans like the Porsche Taycan and the Audi e-tron GT. When the Jaguar teased the upcoming GT back in April of 2023, the company claimed pricing of $127,000. Yeah. The company hasn't confirmed power figures, but claimed that the GT will be the most powerful Jag ever, with the top trim F-Type producing 575 horsepower. We expect that the GT to make somewhere north of 600 ponies. Mm. The new car is said to have a maximum range of 430 miles, though that number will likely be determined using the European WLTP test, which I'm not exactly sure what that is. So they think that the range is going to be a little under 400 miles. So that's a little bit about Jaguar and their shift from gas cars to all electric.
So the biggest thing that sticks out to me is they pretty much own the fact that they are pricing themselves out of the market.
120, and I'm making sure I read that right.
That, so, I mean, I realize Jaguar is a high-end vehicle. They're not in the economy space. I don't think they're in the real person space. I mean, who in the world would fork out that kind of money for a vehicle that you can only drive less than 400 miles?
Well, I have noticed it because every morning before we do the show, I just kind of check the latest news. And one thing that, of course, dominates the news here recently is EVs. And it has not been good news for them recently. And a lot of companies, a lot of it deals with the tax credits. Mm-hmm. And we've discussed this in previous shows. If you want to listen to those, KSGF.com, click on the podcast section, A1 Custom Car Care. Mm-hmm. There you will find it, because we do a pretty good job labeling whenever we talk about EVs in depth. Mm-hmm. But one thing that oftentimes is mentioned is that tax credit, and there has been a drawback from that tax credit, so less and less vehicles are falling underneath it. And it's just interesting to me because you're seeing other manufacturers kind of pull out of the EV game or slowing down their production because consumers are just not buying them the way that they're expecting them to. So it is just very interesting to see one manufacturer decide, you know what, we're going all in.
Yeah. As well as, I mean, Ford Motor Company, they're probably one of the biggest ones that was like all in, if you will. They were pushing the Mach-E, they're pushing the Lightning F-150, and they're not selling.
No, because we did, once again, another show when we were talking about vehicles that were kind of hit and miss, and they were really pushing the Lightnings, and I think that they sold, I think it was under 50,000.
Yeah, it was an abysmal number.
Yeah, across the world, because they were producing it in other countries as well, or they were producing it and then shipping them to other countries, and people were just not buying them.
Well, and I saw some footage this week as well where Elon was being interviewed, and I forget so the freighters won't ship them anymore, because they sunk a freighter because they got in bad weather and there got enough salt water and moisture around the batteries.
I remember this.
And it burned the freighter and sunk it.
Yes, I remember this. And this was like last year.
Yeah. And so Elon's like, well, we upped our battery, you know, waterproofing or membrane or however he does it. I mean, I'm not a Tesla service center by no means. And I've seen some with the new Cybertruck actually driving through submerged water and whatnot. But the big thing is they will eventually catch fire if you, you know, and so Sarah, you and I have done show after show after show on this, that this is an experimental technology. And if you buy one of these vehicles right now, I'm not saying they're not going to work it out down the road. They will. But you're the guinea pig at this point if you choose to own one of these, as well as the resale value on these first production EVs is abysmal. You look at even some of the Avis and the Hertz and the rental car, you know, they kind of dipped their toe in it and really kind of threw some money at it. They're selling them off left and right because the consumers don't want to rent the doggone things.
And the sad thing about those rental companies is I believe they were either forced or they were told, hey, if you buy X amount of vehicles, we're going to give you a tax credit. But I do believe that they were actually told you have to have a certain amount in your fleet by X amount of years.
Yep. I think that was absolutely some of the legislation or some of the influence that the administration is trying to put on this EV market. I do have some things I want to continue talking about this, but Sarah and I need to step into one more break. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF. We'll be right back in a minute.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, we got just a little bit of time left in the show. I want to kind of shift, maybe not shift a little bit, but the last segment on the EV force feeding, if you will, made me kind of think of some things that came up over the last week and weekend. I was visiting with another buddy of mine. He's got a real slick little 90 model Chevy truck that, you know, he was kind of putting some investments in. And it came up that he had seen some on Marketplace, and there was another one. I don't exactly know what year it was, but the conversation kind of went like this, that, you know, he found another truck similar to his that was way, way, way less miles and in really clean shape. This was like the perfect old man truck, if you know what I mean. Like, old boy bought it new. He kept a log of every time he put gas in it and how many miles it was, how many new parts and what miles they put on it. You know, really was meticulous about this truck. And so it had come up for sale, and I want to say it was like a mid-90s Chevy pickup. I'm assuming it was four-wheel drive. Very sought-after truck at this point in time. Really, in my mind, that truck's not that old, but, you know, when I do the math, it's definitely getting up there in age. They wanted $25,000 for a truck that had like 113 to 130,000 original miles. Garage kept, just meticulous, like a time capsule truck. So the conversation was kind of, hey, whether you put money into an older vehicle that you have that's paid for, even if it's 30 years old, or do you jump in the deep end on one of these new vehicles and see how it goes? Well, with the price of these new vehicles, you know, initially when I heard 25 grand, I'm like, that truck wasn't 25 grand brand new. That was probably like a anywhere from $8,000 to $15,000 truck new back in the day, which was a lot of money back then. But now when I hear people, you know, forking out $100,000 for a vehicle, you know, if I was in the position to be able to buy either or, what would I do? Okay. And I think you guys probably know where I'm at on this. $25,000 was unbelievable. Honestly, my reaction was, holy crap, that's a pile of money. But when I compare it to $120,000 for a new pickup right now, we're not quite comparing apples to apples here. I realize that. You know, you look at a new half-ton pickup, they're more capable than some of the older three-quarter ton and one-ton pickups as far as towing capacity, interior creature comforts. I mean, there's some cool stuff out there that you're getting for that $100,000, right? And you better. I mean, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you better get something for it, right? But the $25,000 on that mid-90s Chevy pickup sounded really crazy until I started thinking about it in light of, okay, maybe you own an older truck, right? Maybe it's not this garage-kept, super slick one. Maybe you've got one that you've had or bought, you know, reasonable money. It's paid off. You paid the taxes on it already. But maybe it needs $3,000 to $6,000 to $8,000 to $10,000. Sometimes in the history of me doing this for a few decades here in the Springfield and Republic area, I've had folks come in with a $5,000 truck and didn't want to put $5,000 in it to keep it driving for another 4 or 5 years. or 10 or whatever the case may be. I mean, it's really up to the driver at that point in time. My point with all that is, yeah, you may spend $5,000 or $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000. I mean, that's a lot of money. I'm not downplaying that at all. But how long do I have to keep that vehicle running to not only recoup that investment versus making a car or truck payment, but hopefully keep driving it even after that? And that's really kind of where my mindset is. And I know I've shared this with you guys a lot over the years. You know, I spent probably 3 or 4 years looking for a newer pickup than the one that I had. And I sold the one that I had with like 347,000 miles. Still a very dependable truck, but I was looking to go with some different capabilities and some different upgrades that were important to me and the family for what I needed to use that vehicle for. Now, since then, and I've shared a couple of these with you, but because we had taken such good care of those vehicles, not only did I sell them to somebody that drove them for a couple of years and then they moved into another vehicle, but I saw it relisted again for sale, and they touted the fact that A1 Custom Car Care, or, you know, had owned this vehicle previously. And I think that's a big salute, and I take that as a big compliment. And then, so that happened with a company vehicle of ours. And then my personal one ended up coming up for sale a few years later. And they didn't tout that A1 Custom, because it was obviously Dustin Atwood, but they touted that that vehicle for the miles ran extremely well. And that's years after I had done some significant repairs and getting the vehicle up to par. So a lot of times when we're dealing with these older vehicles, right out of the gate, there's a significant investment that needs to be made to it because of the backlog maintenance and repairs that had not been done previously, which is why normally when you're buying a used vehicle, you're buying somebody else's problems. I'm sure everybody out there's heard that. But if you buy it right on the front side and you negotiate well, you get a good pre-purchase inspection done by, you know, a trusted service center, or hopefully you've got somebody that you have a relationship with that can be that person for you, that you bought it with the intent that, hey, I'm going to have to put some love into this vehicle to get it where it is that I need it to be and last as long as I can get it to last. And depending on how you go about that, I mean, the sky's the limit. I've talked to you many times about either company vehicles or personal vehicles of mine, or even customers or other technicians that I've had the pleasure of working with for the last 20 plus years, and the miles that they get out of the vehicles. So, you know, just this is off the top of my head, our shop service warehouse truck, it's got to be close to 400,000. I sold a couple of personal vehicles of mine last year that were, like I said, 340. Well, it's been a couple of years ago on that one, but 347. And then my Excursion I sold last year that was 440 and some change and still running strong. Now, had I put some significant work and parts and financial investment into those vehicles? Yeah. I've got a tech out at our Republic store. He's been with the company over 30 years. He's got to be getting close to 400,000 on his Chevy Silverado, you know, and those are just testaments, if you will. My service truck that I'm running right now, I think's 240 on it. We've got a little Honda in our personal fleet that I think's around 230, 240, still running strong. Our kids' cars that we have that are out there driving, they're 200 plus thousand. And that keeps us from having car payments and the additional debt that goes along with owning newer vehicles. Now, do I like newer vehicles? Do I have anything against them? Hell, I love them. I want as many as I possibly can afford. But the older I get, the more I understand that, hey, the more debt that I've got, the more I need to mitigate that. And especially in today's economic climate, I'm having a lot of you out there come in and say, hey, I've got this 2000 model Tahoe Suburban. I got this F-150. I got this Toyota. I have, you know, it's been paid off forever. Give it a good health check and let's see what we can do with this. Versus the folks that are running to the dealerships and signing on the dotted line at higher interest rates and higher retail prices than I have ever seen in the history of my time in the automotive repair space. So what does that mean to you? As well as a lot of these newer late model cars, you see them in our shops quite often. A, we're very well equipped and very well trained on late model. Not that we can't do older stuff. I've been working on that stuff for years and have been thoroughly trained along with the rest of our technicians and service advisors on how those systems work. But we continue our ongoing training and education that we want to make sure and not be able to only take care of your older vehicle, but if you do have a newer one, we want you to get the most bang out of the buck as possible. So when you talk about bringing and trusting your $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 vehicle with us, we take that super seriously. As well as when you've got an older vehicle that's maybe been sitting around, maybe been neglected several years, and you really want that brought back up to par, we can do that too. It doesn't happen terribly often, but it's been a couple of years back. We had a gentleman call and say, hey, I've got, I think if I remember correctly, it's an 04 F-250. And if you've got a Ford out there, I have devoted a significant amount of my personal education to being the man that can fix a lot of those systems that maybe even some of the other folks around can't. And not only just fix them, like, you know, you just replace a failed part, but hopefully figure out what caused that part to fail and do something about it while we're in there. So gentleman called, Annie, who is the facility manager there at our Sunset location, does a wonderful job. Talked to him, kind of set some expectations, figured out what his expectations were. And so we brought it in, and I happened to be the tech that drew that job. And so he had had it somewhere else. It kind of came in pieces. Now, I will tell you, if you start a project and you don't finish it, you bring it to me, I do decide whether A, I accept it, and B, what the charges are going to be, because quote unquote, you did half the job means you pay half the price is not how it works. When somebody else is meddled in there before we get there, that makes it infinitely harder, by the way. But I digress. He had tried and been let down by somebody else. I don't know whether it was another facility that was a professional shop or just Jim Bob with a beer under a shade tree, but didn't go well. And so ended up, it had been sitting for a significant amount of time. I ended up doing a crate Ford engine, which still to date, and I've done a bunch of engines personally, and then A1 Custom professionally has done a drove of them. We have some very talented people that, you know, I've had customers say, once somebody goes in there, it's just never quite right afterwards. Well, I can tell you, we have folks that make it right and maybe even better than it was. And that's not just bravado. I mean, I'm putting my money where my mouth is on that deal. But I digress on this one. That was the best starting engine that I have ever put in and ran extremely well. But because it had been sitting, we had moved past just the point of, hey, I need to put an engine or do a repower on this. We ended up going through the steering and suspension on it, the air conditioning system, the brake system, the fuel system, because sitting took its toll as much, if not worse, than if somebody had been working that truck all day long. But I share that story with you to bring up, you know, we went through that, and that was a significant bill. Arguably, he made the right call because it was before a lot of the inflation had kind of went up. And I have seen that truck only for oil changes and maintenance services in the last 2 or 3 years because we took care of everything right out of the gate. And his satisfaction of driving that truck is awesome.
Guess what?
Time's up.
Yeah.
I know.
We're officially out of show. Hey, if you're out there in radio land, you got a question for us, feel free to text us on the Pyramid Roofing Company talk and text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743. Once again, that is 447-5743. Or you can reach out to us on our social media. That is at 1041KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Be safe out there.
Bye.